back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I've brought the sun up and the sunshine because we're getting back out to doing what we do here. And the reason I recruited Don a couple of years ago to do Baltimore Positive, which is I have my State Fair shirt on. We'll be back out at State Fair doing live stuff. We'll also be back down at Fadley's hanging out to kick off the Crab Cake Tour that will take us to Costas, take us to State Fair, take us to Pizza John's and Roost Chris, and probably all over the state of Maryland. One thing we have tried to do around here, by the way, I'm selling the condo, so I want to give a shout out to Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realty. The video's now up. Jeff sent the video camera people through here the other night, so it's all good. It's springtime. Things are happening, and we do the recon around here every week. I recruited Don to do this. And, you know, you usually, this is your segment to have fun and give me a hard time and talk about the week in news and sometimes talk some Oriole baseball. But this is a fascinating week here, right? As we get in 80 degrees, seeing people out, I'm one shot in, but not two shots in. We're planning vacations. Things are starting to, and maybe the NFL draft is a part of that, feel normal for the first time in a long time, right?
Absolutely, Nestor. And before we do that, you mentioned, you know, the video and Jeff Moeller and Gary Realty. I always say when the videos that Moeller and Gary do, they're the cream of the crop. I've looked at many videos.
I couldn't believe it when I saw the video because the last time I listed the place, we did not have an active video, and I watched this little 2-minute video, and I thought, maybe we'll sell the place this time.
Oh, no. I've said to Jeff and his partner a lot of times over the past couple of years, I said, look, I look at a lot of stuff on Zillow, a lot of different things. No one, and I mean this, folks, just take a look. Go ahead and look at Moeller and Gary Realty. Look at the video for Nestor's condo. Nobody does the quality presentation that Moeller and Gary does. So if you're thinking about selling your home, Jeff Moeller, Moeller and Gary Realty, give them a call. But Nestor, you said trying to get back to normal.
I don't want normal. I want like a new beginning because I don't think there's going
to
be normal.
That's probably a better way to say it, isn't it? Because I guess, and I'm on, it's funny, off the air, you said we've got to keep it positive. And I was just texting my own, my kids, my son and my daughter. And I was saying, I'm on this new mission because so much has happened in the past 2 years that it's probably taken me off my mojo a little bit. Some of my close friends, and here's what I mean by that. And that's why when you said off the air, you know, we got to make sure we stay positive. There's a lot going on.
I didn't say that. I said F. Tucker Carlson and everything on Fox News, and I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about lies as a basis of my conversation on a daily basis because I live that on Twitter. You know what I mean? Like I see this stuff that doesn't make any sense, and I feel like there's so many awesome things going on in this country with the economy, with people coming back to life and believing again, but getting that shot in their arm and thinking I'm going to have normal back, but I don't want normal. I want something new. But if normal is you just want your kids back in school, I hear that, right? You want to go back to your office. I understand that.
No. I think that's a good way to look at it. And one of the things some of my close friends know, I had a good buddy that worked with me in the Baltimore County Public Schools. He was deputy superintendent. Again, gone far too soon. I have way too many friends that are gone far too soon. But his name was Mike Riley. And he said, I'd never heard this term. And I think I've gotten off my game a little bit the past 18 months. And I'm ready to get back on my game. He said to me one time, he said, you are truly the pony boy. And I said, the pony boy? The hell is a pony boy? And he said, you know, you're the little kid that came down the steps on Christmas and there was a pile of poo under the Christmas tree. And you looked at your mom and you said, this is great. There has to be a horse around here somewhere. The pony boy. He said, you are the most optimistic guy I know and positive. And I think, Nestor, I've given it a lot of thought over the past month or so. I think the events of the past 18 months or so, or actually past 4 years.
4 years.
Four years.
That's what begat this. There's past no doubt years. That if Hillary Clinton wins the election, I'm here talking sports today. I promise you that's the truth.
Past 4 years. And it doesn't mean.
This is my answer to the orange idiot. That's what this is.
And it doesn't mean that the Democrats don't have fault and they're not problems. We'll talk a little bit today in the recon about what James Carville recently said. But I do think I was off my game. So I'm dedicating myself to, again, trying to find the good, trying to become that pony boy again. And I'm trying to do that right now with the vaccines because we're almost there. But to me, I'll give you as we're talking NFL draft and other things that you're focused on right now, I'm thinking of a football analogy. Thinking of that red-white scrimmage the other day that Maryland had, where evidently they moved the ball at will between the 20-yard lines. And then when they got to the 20, it was damn hard to get that ball in the end zone. And I think about football teams and moving from 20 to 20 and how it can be easy, and then it gets real hard. Well,
we're in the red zone right now, right?
We're in the red zone, and there are and listen. There's a handful of folks, we know the anti-vaxxers, the Jenny McCarthy's and those types. They're not the bulk of Americans, so they're never going to get vaccinated. And we knew that going in. But there's another group called the vaccine hesitant folks who aren't anti-vaxxers. They get their children vaccinated. Some of them get the flu shot, some of them don't. But they're not just and they're not all in red states. But they're
I'm not anti-vax, but I've never had a flu shot.
There you go. So people like, but you went out, and again, you're not crazy about shots, but you looked at the evidence. You're actually a pretty good probably sample of what I'm talking about, Nestor, is that you looked at the evidence and you said, I'm not crazy about shots. I'm not crazy about putting things in my body that I'm not truly sure of, even if the mRNA vaccine development's been in the process for 20 years or so. I'm not crazy about putting it in a body, but I'm less crazy about getting COVID. And I'm less crazy about getting COVID, particularly around my wife, who's had enough medical issues, that I'm going to do it for my community. So I think rather, and I think this is truly Joe Biden's strength, right? We do this sort of weekly Biden watch. And I keep coming back to what is this guy's strength? And boy, there's so much being written now as he's addressing Congress for the first time. His strength appears to me to be the ability to roll the sleeves up, talk no nonsense, and say, look, I get it.
That's how he's gotten elected in Delaware.
Yeah, he's just sort of an ah shucks guy. And when he says, I need you, we're right there. But if that group doesn't come around, I'm concerned that we're not going to be able to move from the red zone. So I just encourage everybody out there, don't get mad at your neighbors and relatives. Don't scream and shout. I know we all feel like we'd like to do that at times. Let's just try to continue to sort of hold their hands, hug them, and say, hey, let's talk through this so that we can help people who are hesitant about getting the vaccine get it, because you know it is so important. As you said, we want a new normal or a new beginning, and you know I think we're about to do that. And speaking of new beginnings, Nestor, I was thinking almost 2 years ago we sat down with our good friend Senator Barbara Mikulski, and I joked with you, and there's few people that I like. I mean, I like a lot of people, but she's near the top of my list. And I said to you, when we went in and we went over to meet in her office, I said, you know, Nestor, I said, just so you know, sometimes the senator just might not be in the mood. And, you know, this might not go well. And if it doesn't go well, we'll come back another day. Well, you began to talk Highland Town and candy shops and bakeries, and all of a sudden,
one of the first things we ever did,
you and she had this sort of love affair, and she was willing to sit there as she's talking about dancing at concerts and playing the ukulele.
I disarmed Babs.
I mean, she took a shine to you. But do you, if you remember, Nestor, do you remember her passion that day for the census and getting it right.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because all the federal money comes from that.
She was so focused on that. And boy, oh boy, did I think about Senator Barb this week when the state of New York lost a congressional seat by 89 people. Had they counted another 89 people, they would not have lost a seat. And that is it. Just again, if folks, you know, who knows if I'll be here, but 10 years from down the road when they do the census.
Well, you have such a strong sense of citizenship, right? Like your social studies thing. I did something you'll be proud of. I want you to go listen to this. I had a guy write me fan mail, which I don't get a lot of that anymore, certainly not on paper. But about 2 years ago, I had a beautifully written letter, two-page letter written to me by a listener. Said he's been listening his whole life. Loved that I was doing Baltimore Positive in the beginning. Didn't even know what it was. He wrote me his letter a couple years ago. I found it during the holidays and during the plague and going through pictures and different stuff. I had filed it away because it's such a nice letter. And I wrote to him, invited him on the show. It turns out he's a doctor like you are of American Studies, professor of American Studies at Penn State. So I had him on. And he thought like I wanted to talk football or baseball. And I'm like, no. Like the whole show is a social studies experiment, right? Like, and this kind of does go back to, I plugged all my middle school, junior high school, social studies, Mr. Schley, Miss Simpkins, Mr. Zents. You probably knew Rick Zents. So I think about that and what the basis of who was paying attention in seventh, eighth, and ninth grade, like as to all of this Americanness and what the flag represents and what our citizenship represents and all of this, right? So this really is a social studies course, right? Like for everyone out there, or maybe a science course when it comes to the vaccines and all this, but really what you believe and what it's based in, right? Like literally.
Oh, and Nestor, truly a social studies class. I mean, let's just think about the implications of the census and what's about to happen. So there are winners and losers. Let's paint a big picture. So Texas, since 1960, and the trend continues, since 1960, Texas has gained 15 congressional seats. Florida, 16 congressional seats. Arizona, 6 congressional seats. The losers, Illinois lost 7 seats. Ohio lost 9. Michigan lost 6.
Well, hang on. We could take this back to Paul Tagliabue and just say Rust Belt.
That's it.
Sun Belt.
It's Rust Belt,
Sun Belt.
Sun Belt. And the implication.
Dude, I'm 52. I love Baltimore. I've been trying my whole life to get to California or Florida. That's what people do, right? They dream of the sun, right? It's why I put it in the picture here, right? So that shouldn't shock. That's almost a manifest destiny thing, right? Like in 1965, you when you were a young man, you could have predicted, well, more people are probably going to go to Florida. Disney World wasn't even there then, right?
Right, and it has serious implications. Also, the fact that we had the smallest, I don't know quite yet what to make of this. The demographers will be telling us what to make of it over the next few months. But a 7% increase, you know, in the United States population, smallest since the 1940s. But go back again.
That's contraception.
To the probably.
No, that's contraception. That's contraception. That's what that is.
People getting married later. I mean, I think back. I always, Nestor, it's amazing. I mean, I was married. I mean, Linda and I this August, well, it's a scary thought, we'll be celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary. I was married at 21. By the time I was 27, we had 2 children. Now, if my grandchildren would suggest to me they're getting married at 21 today, I probably look at them like, you have to be kidding. It was a different time, it was a different place. People getting married much, much later. So all
but that was also part of the American thing and the Catholic thing and the, you know, you need to mate off and make babies, and there was pressure on you from your family to do that. America's not that way. Yeah. That way, I guess, in the suburbs, people vote for Trump, maybe, but that's not the way it works. People in Baltimore City and say, when are you making babies and getting married off and finding a husband? Like, people don't talk like that anymore. Only old people talk like that.
Right. No, there was no doubt. There was –
my kid's 37. I'm not on the phone asking him when he's making babies. He's not. You know what I mean? He's not.
No,
known his wife since they were like – I still think of her as being 18. She's like 30. Something. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know how old she is, but she's starting to get to be the point where they're not going to have babies, and that's okay, you know?
No. Very, very different. I always say whenever I talk to students, you know, young students, older students, that it's really changed in that there was never a moment where my mother talked to me about career choices or not going to college. It was like, it was just, here's what you do. You go to school, you graduate from high school, you go to college, and then you get married and start a family. That was just it. And that's been turned on its head. And I think we see that in the census numbers. The other thing that we see, Nestor, is we're going to see the growing influence of what I'm going to call the low population states. This is one of the fascinating things that the founders did way back in the 1700s. But the latest data that I've seen shows that 12% of the population controls 60% of the Senate seats in the United States Senate. I mean, let that sink in for a minute. 12% of the population controls 60%.
Goats in North Dakota.
It's Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota. Exactly. Right on down. Kansas. Go right on down.
It almost makes your land worth more.
Well, it's
when you consider about, like, if you own land there, your land's more valuable because you're making friggin' rules. Period.
Well, it is. It certainly makes the politics of the nation very, very interesting.
Not reflective of 80% of the people wanting gun control, 80% of the people wanting more than that, wanting health insurance.
Makes it, there you go. See, things. Now, it makes it regional. It certainly makes it regional. And this is where I was trying to connect the dots this week in some conversations that James Carville had. And Carville lit up the Democrats, the raging Cajun, lit up Democrats pretty good. And nobody's more progressive than Carville or been involved in more winning campaigns. But he's saying Democrats, and I think I wouldn't be surprised if he had this lens of the census in mind when he talked. He said, look, we've got to be careful how we talk to folks. We can't come off sounding like a bunch of liberal college professors sitting around with a latte.
Let's get Carville on the show. Let's book him on the show.
I'd love to have Carville on the show.
All right, let's get him on the show.
Yeah, we'll see if we can find somebody who can reach out to him. But his point was, Democrats, as you pointed out, Nestor, this is the stuff that political scientists have a ball with. We've said it over and over and over on the major issues of the day. And this isn't a rant. This is just an observation. On the major issues of the day, Democrats are on the right side of those issues, whether it's gun safety, whether it's expanding access to healthcare. Recent polls show that national voters, including independents and some Republicans, not all, you know, 20 to 30% of Republicans, actually think voting rights are important. So the bottom line is the Democrats are on the right side of the issue, but they need to keep in mind that in 2022 and beyond, for winning the House of Representatives in 2022 just got more difficult because of the census, because of the 2020 census. Republicans, depending on which analysis you read, probably net 3 or 4 seats just by the basis of the census. Now, when you're the Democrats and you only hold the House by 7 seats, 3 to 4 as a starting point, it's pretty significant, particularly when you look at the ability of Republican-held legislatures to gerrymander districts. Now, again, Democrats gerrymander districts as well, and quite honestly, you're going to see some really strange districts in those Democratic states that lost population, which is, again, why we need the For the People Act. It's why we need John Sarbanes' bill, you know, the For the People Act, H.R. 1, to pass. So Democrats are on the right side of the issue, but I think Carville is on to something in that Democrats need to be able to talk to people in straight talk, not as he said, whether it be woke and defund police and all of that stuff, because that doesn't resonate to people. But when you talk straight talk to them, you and I just had Vinny DeMarco on. Who doesn't want the prices of prescription drugs to be under control? Everybody wants that. I think most people want fewer handguns on the streets of America. People want to rebuild our bridges. So Biden's strength is the ability to articulate that. And we've got to find a way, or Democrats have to find a way, to make working men and women across the country understand whose interest is at heart. And you don't want to understand, and I think you're right, we shouldn't spend a bulk of the recon talking about what's going on in the Republican Party. But it seems to me, Nestor, they're having an existential crisis right now as well. And it's fascinating.
We chatted with Michael Steele at length about that, right?
Well, like, and I
had somebody say to me, a Democrat, you know, a very left Democrat, left of me, said, what does he think he's doing? Does he really think he can get Republicans, the majority Republicans in this state, to back a normal Republican? And I'm like, well, that's sort of how Larry Hogan happened. There's the thought that he's not normal. He voted for friggin' Ronald Reagan. Which are probably the first question he would get when he comes on this show, which is probably why he doesn't come on the show. But I am fascinated to see the Andy Harris, and we're going to go talk to Heather Mazier during the Crab Cake Tour over at ChessJet, just to see how far right is here, where right used to be pretty sane in this state. At least I thought Bob Ehrlich was sane when I pimped for him as a Democrat for Ehrlich or whatever the hell they called me.
Well, And the best example on the national stage, that folks who do like to follow politics and trends ought to keep an eye on, is Liz Cheney. I mean, the Liz Cheney, Kevin McCarthy breakdown is pretty interesting from a political science point of view. You can't be traditionally more conservative than Liz Cheney. It's just impossible. She's her dad's daughter. She's as doctrinaire, small c, conservative as you can get. But yet she is willing to say, and this goes to your question about a Michael Steele.
What do you say, small c? What does that indicate? What's that?
That means you're fiscally conservative. You truly.
So capital C would be religiously and Trumpy conservative. What is a capital C? I'm trying to understand.
Well, yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's the way I would define it. Other people might define. I always say traditional.
I don't know where the jumping off point is with right. God, guns, Trump, lying, dumping stuff in the water. Right. I've never seen that combination. I get the keep the taxes low. Let's have individual freedom so that the government's not telling us what to do. I'm as libertarian as they come when it comes to that stuff. You lose me when you start voting with the Nazis.
Yeah.
White supremacy. Lose everybody in this country, but it hasn't. And clearly white supremacists are not going to support Michael Steele in this state, no matter what it says in front of him, you know?
Nestor, that's the challenge that we have in not talking about this existential crisis taking place in the Republican Party. So Liz Cheney has made up her mind. She's going to go to Wyoming and say to those voters, I know you didn't like my vote on the impeachment, but it was the right thing to do.
All 110,000 of you who live in Wyoming.
Here's why I did it. Yeah, well, whatever lives in Wyoming, right. The 700,000 of you or whatever. Actually, it's one of the states that Baltimore County is larger than. I always say Wyoming, Vermont, Alaska, and North Dakota. So Baltimore County is larger than four states, Wyoming being one of those. So you take, she's going to articulate that vote. She was asked the other day by Fox News, by Neil Cavuto, if Trump were to be the nominee again in 2024, would you vote for President Trump? She said, no, I would not. So she's willing to try to say, look, we've got to be about something else. But while at the same time she's doing that, Paul Gosar in Arizona and the QAnon conference are having this bogus audit right now. Now, the Arizona votes have been counted three or four times. I know three. I think it may actually be four. Maricopa County, where Phoenix is, had a hand recount, found absolutely no fraud. The head of the election board in Maricopa County said there was absolutely no fraud. So now, in the spirit of transparency, they've got this group called Cyber Ninja. You know, that tells you all you need to know, which was one of the big proponents of the big lie, is going into Arizona, and they're going to conduct their own audit. But here's the catch. Nobody can come in and watch except OAN. So traditional Republicans, and there are some still out there, are looking at that. And we know that the Ninja Conference and Paul Gosar, who makes no bones about having his picture taken with white supremacists. I mean, that's not Don Mueller saying that. Just go. Paul Gosar proudly pals around with white nationalists. So they'll hold a press conference. They will say that Donald Trump won the state by 200,000 votes. It will all be a lie.
Benghazi is what they should call
it. It will all be a lie. But the census, the point is, the census matters, and it does affect electoral politics. And because of the founders, it does probably keep us, it does moderate us, and it does make us, as most people would suggest, a center-right country. Although certainly President Biden, both with his infrastructure plan and what he's about ready to announce, will be announced by the time this airs, the American Families Plan, is truly doing his best FDR imitation, right, to really change the arc of the nation. So we will see where we go. So that's sort of, you know, that's sort of a
Census 101. There's my social studies teacher.
Census 101. Now, meanwhile, on the recon, because we never go in a straight line. I know you're not a movie guy. I was vindicated. I can't wait till we get our buddy Max Weiss on. We love Max, and I think she disagrees with me. And Max and I are, you know, we love our movies. You don't. She was okay, maybe a little more than okay, with the Academy Awards. Nestor,
it was a snooze fest. I had it all.
Hard for me to admit. I turned to Linda about 25 minutes in, and I said, you okay with jumping to Netflix? And she said, yeah, this isn't very good. I didn't realize, you know, you talk about a new normal. And again, maybe it's about eight. And I saw the ratings, Nestor, from young people, you know, the 18 to
I like The Room. Characters. I thought The Room was elegant and cool and awesome. I just thought it just lacked everything. It was terrible.
It lacked everything. And here's what I was struck by, Nestor. The big, booming orchestra. It may be an age thing. I miss Whoopi or Chris Rock or Billy Crystal or Neil Patrick Harris with a big, splashy opening number. All of that. And then they made a strange decision, I thought, to really limit the clips of the films. And it was a year. The other thing that hampered it, I think, was, and I don't know that they even knew it was going to hamper it as much as it did, was the fact that people did not get to enjoy the films in the movie theater. I don't care how much you're spending on demand or watching on Netflix. It's not the same as the big screen. So millions of Americans were not as familiar with what was going on.
Well, we talk about all the industries that have been shuttered, whether it's music, whether it's sports, all sorts of things have been screwed up. I mean, I didn't go to movies to begin with, and it's something I don't miss, and it's something – and if you did miss it, I guess you didn't miss it because you can still watch movies anytime, anywhere. You can't go to a ball game, but you could watch it on TV. But the things that you couldn't do, like, at all, like concerts and eating inside and hugging relatives, those are the things that – the movies, is it's going to struggle to come back. Like, I think a lot of things are going to struggle to come back.
Absolutely. And then just to finish with the Oscars, then they never outthink yourself, right? And you've produced so many things over the years, from public events and special radio, special one. Never outthink yourself. So the director of the show, and Max did write about this, said she took a break, went to get a drink of water or something, came back, and they were announcing Best Picture. And she thought, well, wait a minute. Best Picture is always the very last thing. Did I like miss Best Actor? Well, the director of the show assumed that Chadwick Boseman was going to win Best Actor. And he said, you know what we're going to do? It's going to be really cool. We're going to hold Best Actor till the very end. And that'll be this emotional send-off. It'll really be the highlight of the show. Well, lo and behold, Chadwick Boseman doesn't win for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, but Anthony Hopkins wins for The Father. Anthony Hopkins isn't there. They forget to call Olivia Colman up to accept the award, and the show ends. I mean, it was really just sort of captured.
I didn't stay that long.
Yeah, so no, to me either. I mean, I only know that by reading about it, because I said I bailed. So hopefully next year we get our Academy Awards back. Hey, before we run, man, we always do our, I always call it our MLB look back. I thought of you. What did you think? Now, let me set it up for you. This is a softball coming your way now. So Major League Baseball has determined, for better or worse, right, Nestor, that 7 innings is an official game. We play 7-inning baseball. Madison Baumgartner pitches a no-hitter for that official baseball game, except we find out it's not a no-hitter. So on your favorite topic, what can baseball get wrong? What in the world? How did you react to the fact that Baumgartner pitches a no-hitter, but it's not a no-hitter?
I'll just call it a no-hitter. I'm just so fed up with all of it. You know, the Hall of Fame being lousy and records, and you know they're gonna wind up playing less games. I'm convinced they're not gonna play 162 games anymore. I'm convinced.
Why do you think that? What do you mean?
I just think they're gonna make the season shorter. I think that's where this is gonna wind up going inevitably.
Well, I would like that.
They have too much season.
I would definitely
will mess up all the numbers, right? That'll mess up all the 61s and the Barry Bonds. I mean, Barry Bonds messed up the numbers with the steroids, and then McGuire and Sosa before him. And by the way, you want my Major League Baseball snark of the week was the picture of Alex Rodriguez showing that he took a shot. I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah, Alex Rodriguez taking a shot. You get it? Get it? Shot?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it's not the first shot.
He
encouraged everyone to get a shot. So
A-Rod doesn't have – A-Rod is not afraid of needles. Is that what
it was very clear. It was not his first time at the rodeo. So,
hey, listen. Before we wrap, here's your journalism question for the week. And I will tell you, I got this one wrong. Do you know, and it'll get to what the New York Times is about to do. Do you know why op-eds were originally called op-eds, Mr. Journalism?
Opinion, editorial. Because it wasn't the opinion of the paper. It was an opinion of a person, right?
It's what I would have thought. It's what I would have answered on Jeopardy, and you and I would have been wrong. It's one of those things where it's as simple as it sounds. It was originally called that because in a print edition, and this will talk about evolving journalism, they were the opinions written that were opposite of the editorial page. as those of us who grew up on print editions.
Fair enough.
The editorial page.
That makes sense. Okay.
Op-ed. Well, now.
I might have been able to come up with that. Well, now that you've, you know, but like I'm not old enough to really remember it like that. But somebody in the newspaper probably, Fraser Smith probably could have talked.
Well, you and I are going to talk. We're going to end with Fraser today. So this op-ed thing leads into that. So the New York Times has made a decision that they are no longer going to call that page the op-ed, because in digital world, there is no opposite the editorials. They all appear under opinion, and op-eds moving forward in the New York Times, which probably means every other newspaper, since the New York Times sort of sets the tone, will be known as guest editorials. So the next time you write your opinion piece that appears in the New York Times, it will be Nestor Aparicio, guest editorial. So, hey, Nestor, let's take a moment to remember our friend Fraser and his appearances on Baltimore Positive. Going back to when you were at the Sun and Fraser was one of the revered guys down there, take a moment to reflect on those people you crossed paths with down there, Fraser being one, and the kind of people they were.
You know, I talked about Dick Irwin this week, and he and Fraser were, you know, very much colleagues and contemporaries. And I went whitewater rafting on the Yakagami with Dick. And I was telling the story, and I guess part of telling, I was talking to Bill Cole from Cole Roofing about it. And I said, part of it was like, any of the older people at the paper, I mean, you knew me at this point. You're rare in my life. You knew me when I was, you knew me as an adult. There are a lot of people who knew me as a kid when they were kids, but you knew me as an adult in 1982. I mean, I walked into the newspaper in 1984. I was 15 years old and this tall and this fat. In 1986, I was 17 years old getting a permission slip signed. You knew what a like sort of an aggressive personality I was as a 16-year-old kid. But when I got into that newsroom, everyone in there was a little bit of a celebrity to me, you know, like in the way that I read them in the paper, they had a byline. Even the editors, I started to really get instant respect for editors, even though their name wasn't in the paper. They were the defense. They would, you know, if you had a typo, they were the ones that made that happen. They were the one that gave the headlines that make people want to read it, you know? So everybody around there, all the editors, all the photographers, like I treated them all, probably the way I treated Mr. Moeller. I treated them all as though they did something to get their gig, you know, that they had some wisdom that I needed to get. They had a college degree. They had a job. They had a union deal. They had holidays. They had all the things that I wanted to have, right? So being in that newsroom, but they were all good writers, and I wanted to be a good writer. And they all had a way of looking at things. And I asked questions. I was a pain in the ass. I mean, I was for all of them. I was always in their lunch. And Fraser was like so old and revered and stately. And like, I hung out with the younger, hipper people because I was always afraid of the older people unless they invited me in, you know? But all of them had this incredible wisdom. And I've said this to you before. I am blessed to be able to do this, not because I was a sports guy, but because guys like Stedman pulled me up and talked to me about other stuff that wasn't sports related, more real life related. And I read the whole newspaper. I just didn't read the sports page. I read the front page. I read the news page. I was up with what was going on with politics because I was trying to get a football team here, right? So there was all of this stuff happening. And all of those people, and that's the part that I'm losing, right? And I think you and I have opined privately about the quality of younger people, the quality of journalists, what happens when the Sun doesn't pay right and when papers don't pay right. What happens to those people in their career and where do they move? And what happens to news and what happens to reporting on courts and holding criminals like Kathy Pugh or Sheila Dixon accountable, right? That comes from smart people being in one place. And when I think of the paper, I think of it as just this, I didn't get a college education at UB or despite what Dr. Curtinitis may say, I got my education being in that Sun newsroom for those 6 years, being there in the middle of the night, being there in the morning, and just being around really smart, hard-nosed. I mean, Fraser was not an most people would call Fraser, I think, in retrospect, he was intimidating to me as a 17-year-old because he was a take-no-shit kind of guy, and you weren't going to bullshit Fraser Smith. And that was kind of how you don't bullshit journalists, real journalists, because they ask tough questions and they hold you accountable. And the same way that you weren't going to bullshit your social studies teacher with a fake term paper on a book you didn't read. So having tough love and people like Phil Jackman, who's in ailing health right now and is like a father to me, that'll be a tough day for me. Those people were smart. And in my life's journey, I haven't been in rooms full of really smart people real often. And that was the gift to me in 1986.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think that's a thank you for that. That's a wonderful look back. I when Fraser passed recently, suddenly, and again, you know, you and I remained in contact with Fraser, you know, throughout Baltimore Positive. He's a wonderful guest, been on two or three times. I had talked with him just recently. We were talking about, as soon as it warmed up here, getting out to play golf. Fraser was an amazing golfer. People may know. I mean, he had the golf swing of a professional golfer, and his game was commensurate with that swing. But I thought of him. I thought of another close friend of mine, Mike Bowler, who won major awards as an education reporter for years at the Sun, wrote a column called The Education Beat. He was a contemporary of Fraser. They're just, as you said, these quality old line journalists who I think
of our friend Lester would write about, or Rodericks or Jacques, right, or any of the people that were of that era. And I was just a kid, man. I was fly on the wall trying to soak it all in,
and as I said, he wasn't intimidated. They joke. He joked. He wrote to this day the definitive biography of William Donald Schaefer.
And Schaefer didn't like him at all, right?
Oh no, called him every name in the book. He wrote the book on Lefty.
Book on Peter Angelos.
Lefty, yes, you did. Lefty and Len Bias, and then that great book that he finished his career with, The Daily Miracle, talking about the importance of journalism.
But you talk about my alley, right? Sports and journalism and newspapering and asking, I mean, like Fraser, talk about Fraser all day, but like the Lefty Driesell and the Len Bias death, like everyone here who had anything to do with that read his work. So his work wasn't news work. It wasn't politics. I mean, Schaefer was a big part of the stadiums and a big part of sports. And that was a big part of Schaefer's story. And his biography was tied to sports. And he wasn't a sports guy at all. Well, he wasn't a sports fan at all. But Fraser's work came in touch with sports because sports was such a part of Baltimore, you know?
Well, and I thought of his legacy living on in our good friend, outstanding reporter at the Sun right now, Pam Wood, who always says to us at least once a visit, said that, you know, she always describes journalism this way. If your mom says she loves you, you ask your mom to prove it. You know, you don't take anything. And that to me captured Fraser. So I think to all who knew Fraser, his family, his loved ones,
I'm so glad we partner, sat down with him, Carol, and got the stories we got, right?
I cherish those. And I say, I had an uncle. I'll close with this, Nestor. I had an uncle who I've quoted many, many times over the years. I don't know if it's grammatically correct, but when he really got inside of someone's soul and really liked them, he would say, you know what? He would say to me, they're just good people. They're just good people. So that's the way Uncle Bob would put it. So I would say, Fraser, you were just good people. Here's to you, buddy. We're going to miss you.
The Recon, we're going to wrap it up. Don Moeller, former Baltimore County executive. You can find he and I together out at Baltimore Positive, talking about Fraser, talking about healthcare, talking about crabs, talking about the Bay, talking about baseball, all of that available. I am Nestor. We are WNSD.net. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.